Nancy Deprah's 7-year-old daughter, Emily, fidgeted nonstop during their pastor's sermon. After about 20 minutes of wiggling and periodic deep sighs, Emily turned to her mom and whispered, saying, "Does he get paid for this?" Mom smiled and nodded. Emily pondered this for a second and then said, "How much?" Thankfully, your generous giving to Life Journey Church does a whole lot more than provide a living wage for me, the preacher. Everything that we are as a church, everything that we do as a church, is made possible by your generous giving. So once each year, we take a moment in time where we invite we who are part of this congregation to step back and to think about how much am I feeling called to give to God's work through my church this year. You'll see some information about that on the back of your worship bulletin today. Each one of us knows the difference that this church has made and is making in our lives, how it fuels our souls, gives us a sense of community, a church family, how working together we can accomplish so much more for God than we ever could on our own, so that we have the chance to be part of something that is greater than ourselves. The legacy of this church becomes part of the legacy of each one of our life's work. You may say, "Jeff, I just don't know how much to give to church. What's the right amount?" You know, the best advice I ever heard in response to that question is, number one, don't give too much. If you set a goal that's overly ambitious, you'll end up flaming out, get discouraged, and quit. By the same token, don't give too little. Jesus specifically warns us in Luke's gospel about the danger of comfortable giving. That's where we pick an amount to give that's easy within our income. Instead, the wisest advice I've ever heard about church giving is set a goal of giving that will stretch you just a little bit. It's called stretch giving. The idea is we figure out what we can comfortably give, and then we challenge ourselves to stretch just a little beyond our comfort zone so that we are little by little, bit by bit, over the course of time, growing our faith and growing our generosity. We know how much we need this church, but you and I also know a lot of people who are like us who really need what we can offer here. Will you partner with us as a regular giver? The response form is on the back of our worship bulletin today. There are pins out in the social hall at the welcome desk. There's a big purple box there where we can return our response forms. If you love this church, if you believe in what God is doing through this church, if you believe Central Indiana needs more of what this congregation can offer, then please be a part of this. At any level, it makes a difference. Together, we can accomplish so much more than by ourselves. But that is not the focus of today's sermon. So let's say a prayer, and then we're going to shift gears, and we're going to look at an absolutely critical gospel passage that has been laid before us today. Let's pray. God, you are so good. You have blessed us so much. It gives us joy to give back to you. Help us to live with open and generous hearts, not just in our giving. We want to approach all of life with open and generous hearts so that we have the joy of experiencing that and so that we can share with others in ways that really touch their lives. Remind us, each one of us today, of our capacity to give the gift of healing, just as Jesus did. For it's in his name we pray. Amen. If you were to ask me why I follow Jesus, and if I were to cut through the fog and get to the heart of the matter, I would say that I follow Jesus because of what he does in today's scripture passage. It's that simple and it's that profound. We're in the midst of a sermon series called The Beauty of Christ Living in Me. Each week we're picking a different gospel passage and asking, what is it that Jesus does in this passage that is so beautiful, that is so compelling? And then we're considering what it would look like for each one of us to incorporate that characteristic into our lives where we live now. Today's gospel passage tells us, Luke 5:12, once when Jesus was in one of the cities, there was a man covered with leprosy. There is the first of three key phrases that jump out at me in today's gospel passage that I think we need to focus on if we're going to get what God has for us in today's gospel passage. That first phrase being that this man was covered with leprosy. In other words, this is not a man who had a little patch of leprosy on his forehead. This is not a man whose extremities, only his fingers and toes, had been affected by this disease. No, this was a man in the advanced stages of this disease. This was a man who was covered in leprosy. Can you picture what that might have looked like? Can you imagine that? Actually, I'll show you. Now, admittedly, this is a difficult photograph to look at, and so if you need to, feel free to look away, though I challenge you to try to look at it so that you can experience the full force of today's gospel passage and what it's trying to communicate to us. This is what a person looks like who is covered in leprosy. It is hard to look at. With every fiber of our being, we just want to look away. According to healthnet.com, leprosy is caused by a certain kind of bacterial infection that attacks the skin and the nervous system of the body. It's a progressive disease. It gets worse and worse over the course of time. The early symptoms of leprosy are painless ulcers, skin lesions, and damage to the eyes. But as the disease gets worse and worse, in the later stages, the symptoms are large ulcerations, the rotting of the fingers and the toes, skin nodules, and facial disfigurement. The disease is believed to be spread. It still exists in certain parts of the world today. The disease is believed to be spread through the mucus of the nose and droplets of nasal mucus as when we sneeze. Back in Jesus' time, all people knew was that this disease was terribly contagious. And so, back in those ancient days, if you had been diagnosed with leprosy, you would be forced to leave your home, to leave your family, to leave your village, and to take up residence outside the gates of the city, living like a homeless person. If you had family, your family would bring you food outside the gate. But if you had no family, you would literally have to beg to survive. Because this disease was so contagious, people back then who had leprosy, when they saw someone approaching them who did not know their condition, they were required to call out, "Unclean! Unclean!" So you can imagine the scene. As Jesus is approaching this particular city on this particular day with a leper living outside the gates of the city, he sees Jesus approaching and no doubt dutifully calls out, "Unclean! Unclean!" He must have been dumbfounded as Jesus, instead of heeding his warning, grows ever closer and walks right up to him, looks him in the eye, does not avert his eyes from that disfigured face like so many others do. And in that moment, this man with leprosy must have sensed that this could be his moment. Luke 5:12, the leper bowed with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean." "Jesus, I've heard about you and the mighty deeds that you've worked. You could give me back my family. You could give me back my home. You can give me back my health. You can give me back my face. Lord, please, please. Verse 13 tells us, then Jesus stretched. Stop there. Second key phrase. Jesus stretched. Now I understand that literally what it's telling us is that Jesus started to stretch out his hand. But like with many scriptures, there is a deeper meaning embedded in Luke's inspired choice of words. In other words, with most scripture passages, there is the plain meaning of the passage, but also infused with the wisdom of the Spirit, there are levels of meaning and nuance that we're meant to get out of the passage. I find my attention focused on these words, Jesus stretched, as it giving us a glimpse into what must have been Jesus' emotional state in this moment when he was in the close presence of this dangerously contagious and disfigured man. Haven't you ever found yourself in a situation that stretched you, that you wanted to avoid with all your might, that you found yourself wanting to run from? I remember a time when I was in seventh grade. I was in a new school building that had a classroom there for children with mental disabilities. I'd never before been in the presence of children with disabilities. Back in that day, they kept children with mental disabilities pretty much segregated from the rest of us. But there was a classroom in this building of children with mental disabilities, and I noticed that these kids acted in ways that were unusual to me and that I did not understand and that frankly frightened me. Sometimes they would say things that I wouldn't understand or do things that seemed impulsive. And since I had never been around children like this before, I found myself, to my shame, scared to death of them. To the point that one day when I was standing in the drinking fountain line and one of them walked up behind me, I darted. We fear those who are different from us, usually. That's what was happening in that situation. And I suspect, as Jesus was in the presence of this man with a grave and contagious disease, he must have felt some of that discomfort. You may say, but Jeb, this was Jesus, fully God, as the creeds say. Yes, but those creeds also say fully human. The fully human part means that Jesus could feel fear like we feel fear. Hebrews 4:15 puts it this way. Jesus was tempted in all points as we were, yet without sin. To be human is to experience fear, the temptation of fear. So don't kid yourself and imagine that what Jesus was doing in today's gospel passage was easy for him. It was not easy for him. What would have been easy would have been for him to fold his arms and keep his hands close and back up and keep maybe a safe 20-foot distance from this man and talk to him from there. But instead, Jesus puts himself in his immediate presence, looks him in the eye, the man calls out to him, and Jesus stretches out his hand and touches him. No! Jesus! What do you think you're doing? He's contagious. Don't touch him. This is the third key phrase in this passage. He touched him. If this were a suspense thriller, this would be the point in the story where the thunder would clap, the lightning would strike, and the lights would go out. If this were a romance, this would be the point in the story where the two lonely hearts embraced for the first time. If this were a murder mystery, this would be the point in the story where the key clue drops and suddenly the dots are connected. Jesus touched him. Kaboom! Thunder claps, lightning strikes, and there is a surge of divine power that must have left that man with leprosy feeling a bit dazed and woozy. I wonder what he felt when Jesus touched him. I wonder how long it had been since he had felt any human touch. 2 years? 5 years? 10. He was in the advanced stages of the disease. It had no doubt been years since he felt any human touch. Jesus touched him, and immediately the leprosy left him. He touched me. Oh, he touched me. And now what joy floods my soul. Something happened, and now I know he touched me. This man that all the children were afraid of and would run from, this man that parents would tell their kids, don't go near him. Jesus touched him and made him whole. And that is why I worship him. That is why I want Christ to live in me. That is why I sing about him. But it's not enough to sing about him, because the highest form of worship is not singing to or about Jesus. The highest form of worship is to observe what he does and then seek to replicate it in our own lives. Remember what Jesus said to us last week in Luke 6:40. A disciple who is fully qualified will be like the teacher. In other words, the sincerest form of flattery is imitation. The sincerest form of worship is to strive to walk in the footsteps of the one that we are worshiping, the one that we admire. About 10 years ago, a man named Norman Shackelford was told by his doctor that he needed to lose a significant amount of weight or his health was going to be in serious danger. Norman had tried all kinds of different diets. Nothing seemed to work for him. So he decided to get creative. He thought to himself, if I restricted myself to eating foods that I don't particularly like, then maybe that will be a way of regulating my intake. And so he decided that for 4 to 6 weeks, he was going to eat only apples, which he didn't like very much, and only drink Tab, which he didn't like very much. Who does like Tab, right? And so, 4 to 6 weeks, only apples, only Tab. He lost a significant amount of weight, so much so that as people began hearing about this online, it became kind of a fad diet. And before long, many different people were following this same diet, eating only apples, drinking only Tab, with the same amazing results. In fact, some of them who followed this diet had so much success and became so passionate about it that they decided to spread word by forming a traveling choir that became known as the Norman Tab and Apple Choir. Norman Tab and Apple Choir. I hear that they sounded wonderful. But the moral of the story is, if someone discovers a great way to do something, we imitate them to achieve the same success. It's not enough to simply sing about it. Ephesians 5:1, be ye imitators of God as dear children. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11, these stories in the Bible serve as an example for us and were written down to instruct us. In other words, we're supposed to take what we see Jesus doing in today's gospel passage as an example that we are supposed to seek to replicate in our own lives in authentic ways. Now, none of us in our life, given where we live, is apt to ever encounter a real-life leper. But again and again and again and again, you and I will encounter people who desperately need our healing touch. And mind you, today we are not just talking about physical touch. Yes, physical touch can be incredibly powerful. In fact, I was reading an interesting article in Psychology Today this past week that talked about the studies that show the physiological benefits from the gift of human touch. One of the most interesting points in the article is that the person who does the touching has been shown to receive as much benefit as the person who is touched. For example, someone who gives a massage has the same beneficial physiological responses as the one who is receiving the massage. The slower heartbeat, the release of hormones that are important to the health of the body. Another study showed that people who give hugs receive as much physiologically from that as those who receive the hugs. And then, of course, on top of that, there are the psychological and emotional benefits of human touch. So there is a reason why Jesus touched the leprous man in this story. There is power in physical touch. But we're not just talking about literal physical touch. When someone says something that really moves you, you say to that person, "What you said really touched me." When someone does something that means the world to you, you say to that person, "What you did really touched my heart." Which is the greater miracle, touching the body or touching the heart? By what we do and what we say, we can replicate in our own time and place, in our own unique way, the same miracle of touch that we see Jesus performing in today's gospel passage. The very same power that Jesus carried with him, we now carry in us, says who? Jesus himself. John 14, verse 12. "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do." Did you get that? "Will also do the works that I do." In fact, Jesus says, "will do greater works than these." Just like Jesus, you have been entrusted with the power of healing touch. Just like Jesus, you have been put here on earth to make the most of that gift of healing. So what would it look like for us to authentically seek to repeat that pattern in our lives? A woman who is a part of our church, who sometimes attends the West Side Oasis, Molly is her name, at Oasis one night was telling us a story about her 3-year-old daughter. The two of them were in the same vehicle together one day. Mom was driving, of course, her 3-year-old in the back seat, in the car seat, clutching a $1 bill like only a 3-year-old who has just earned her very own $1 bill can do. I mean, she was proud of that $1 bill. "It's all mine." About that time, they pulled up to a stoplight, and there was a homeless man on the corner who was begging. Molly's little girl asked her, "What's he doing?" Mom said, "Well, he doesn't have a home." Her little girl said, "Did he have breakfast this morning?" Molly said, "Probably not. He doesn't have any money. That's what he's doing there." Her little girl said, "I have a dollar." Mom said, "Do you want to give it to him?" "Yeah," she said. So mom, not wanting to deprive her daughter of this blessing, rolls the back window down just enough that her daughter can lean forward and hold the dollar out the window. As the elderly homeless man approached the vehicle, he realizes that it's a little 3-year-old girl giving him this dollar. He's so touched, he breaks down and weeps because he realizes she's giving him everything she's got. He thanks her, the light changes, and they start off. Molly's little girl says, "Now he's got a dollar." And then it hits her, and she says, "And I don't." Her mom says, "Yeah, but now he can get something to eat." Her daughter says, "Yeah, she got it." You see, Molly's daughter was getting more from that exchange than even the homeless man did. The one who touches often receives an even greater blessing than the one who has been touched. It's not fancy. It's not complicated. Even a child can do it. Who does the leper in today's gospel story represent in your life? Somebody that you have to stretch yourself to touch, to bless, to dare to be involved with. For most of us, it's probably someone who is different from us. Someone that we have been conditioned by our background to perceive as the other. It may be for us someone who speaks a different language, or someone who is an immigrant, someone who has a different hue of skin. It may be for us someone with a mental or a physical disability. It may be a personal or a political enemy. It may be an elderly person who has dementia. Who is it in your life that it would stretch you to reach out and touch? Are you willing to stretch yourself out of your comfort zone like Jesus Christ before you? Reach out and touch that person's life. To this we are called as imitators of Jesus. One of my aunts, I won't name her because I don't want to embarrass her, but my favorite aunt growing up, I was having dinner with her a few months ago, and she was telling me how my cousin, her daughter, is teaching now in the public schools, and I have to tell you, although it's hard to say, but the truth is my aunt is a classic racist. It's the way she's been raised. She's been in that bubble. She's never stretched herself beyond a little place where she's lived her entire life. And so she was telling me that her daughter is teaching in this public school, which I knew, but she was telling me about it. And she, my aunt, decided to become a teaching assistant for her daughter in her classroom. But in this school, in my cousin's classroom, it's filled with Burmese immigrant children. My aunt said to me, "I wasn't so sure at first." But she said, "Jeff, they're just like me." She said, "Yeah," I wanted to say, "What did you expect, Aunt so-and-so?" But she went on to say, "I love them so much." Now, we could critique her, but at least she had the courage to stretch herself and reach out and touch, and she is receiving far more healing than she will ever offer those kids. The power of healing touch has been entrusted to us to be used. Who is the stranger in your life? Who is the leper in your life? Are you willing to take the same chance that Jesus did? I have a friend named Donna Mendel, who's a brilliant psychologist who focuses on psychological research. She's spent the bulk of her career working on refining a simple behavioral theory that she calls Mendel's deprecatory principle. It's simple yet elegant. It can be outlined in a simple graph that looks like this. As you can see, the vertical axis here is labeled give a rip, although my friend Donna uses a stronger phrase there. She uses an S word there, but I cleaned it up for church. So the vertical axis measures how much we care. The horizontal axis measures our age. And the simple truth of humanity is that for most people, the longer we live, the more cynical, the more crusty we get, and the less empathetic and caring we get. But for followers of Jesus, it's supposed to be just the opposite. The graph is supposed to be reversed, so that the more we walk with Jesus and the more of Him that comes alive in us, the deeper and deeper we care about those who are around us. How about you? Are you like Jesus, reaching out to the stranger? But don't get me wrong, this gift of healing touch is not just for strangers. It's also for people that you rub shoulders with every day in your workplace. Who is it in your workplace that really stretches you? Yeah, you got somebody in mind? Somebody who really stretches you, but who may desperately need your healing touch. Back in 2001, Tim Gagline was appointed by then President Bush to be the head of the Office of Public Liaison at the White House, a prestigious position that brought him into daily contact with the President of the United States. 7 years later, his career came to an abrupt halt when a blogger discovered that 27 of Gagelein's 39 published articles were plagiarized. It took less than 24 hours for Gagelein to lose his job. He said, quote, "This was a personal crisis unequaled in my life, bringing great humiliation on my family and my closest friends, including the President of the United States." He was summoned to a meeting with the president at the White House. Filled with dread, Gagelein entered the Oval Office, closed the door, and as he started to walk toward the president before he could even sit down, Tim said, "Mr. President, I owe you a..." He says the president interrupted him and said, "Tim, you're forgiven." Stunned, Tim started to repeat himself, "Mr. President, I owe you..." "Stop," the president said. "Tim," he said, "in my life I have known great grace and mercy." I don't know if you know former President Bush's story, but as a young adult, he was an alcoholic. And through the grace and mercy of key people in his life, he managed to find recovery and go on to become President of the United States. "Stop, Tim," he said. "I have found great grace and mercy in my life. You are forgiven." And then he went on to engage him in a conversation about how he was going to pull his life back together again and get on the path of recovery. It was just what Tim Gagelein needed in that moment. A powerful healing touch. Kaboom! The Spirit of Christ in President Bush, regardless what we may or may not think of his politics, in this moment, the Spirit of Christ rises up in President Bush and causes him to reach out and give a miraculous healing touch to someone who desperately needed it. How about you in your workplace? Are you daring to touch that one who so needs that gift? We are called to use this great gift that has been entrusted to us with the strangers among us. We're called to use it with those that we meet in our workplace each day. But even more than all of that, we're called to use this gift with our loved ones and within our families where it is most needed and where we often in our tiredness show the least grace. At breakfast one morning, a husband said to his wife, "What would you do if I won the lottery?" She said, "I'd take half and leave." He said, "Great, I won $6 yesterday. Here's $6. Keep in touch." What's the good of being entrusted with the gift of healing touch if we don't use it where it's most needed? What would you guess is the single greatest, the number one factor in the breakup of marital relationships? According to one of the leading researchers on marital relationships, John Gottman, the number one factor in breaking up marital relationships is contempt. When we show contempt toward our partner, it is poison, it is corrosive. And what would you guess is the number one glue that holds marital relationships together? From Gottman's research, he says it's kindness. Simple kindness shown to a spouse, parent, child, sister, brother, good friend, when they don't deserve it, can result in amazing healing miracles. You have the power. Why not use it? Let me close with this. In her book, Love to Last a Lifetime, Jill Severson tells the story of her elderly parents who had been married for 60-plus years. Her mother was in the middle stages of Alzheimer's. One evening, Jill was at her parents' apartment watching television with them. As the sun went down, as it grew darker, her mom grew more and more agitated. A typical response for people with Alzheimer's is called sundowner's syndrome. And so as the darkness fell, her mother became more and more agitated, more and more antsy. She started to get loud. She started to say, "I'm tired. Will someone please take me home?" But of course, they couldn't take her home. She was already at home, and so she didn't understand why they weren't responding to her demands. Will someone please take me home? I'm tired. She started to focus her attention on her husband, saying to him, I'm tired. Will you please take me home? She turns to her daughter, Jill, and says, all he ever does is shake his head. He never says nothing to me. She wasn't able to remember that her husband had had his voice box removed 2 years earlier, so she couldn't understand why he never, all he could do was point at his throat and shake his head like, I can't speak. So she becomes more and more agitated as it goes on. Before long, she's shouting at her husband curses and saying terrible and hurtful things to him. He's a retired dock worker, Jill says, a tough man, but his eyes start to tear up, not so much because of the words that his wife was calling him, which was very out of character for her, but because he knew that this was her way of saying, I am scared and I am confused, and he couldn't do anything about it. Then Jill says, on a dime, her mother's mood swung from surly to sweet. She looks over at her husband and says, you poor man. You're a good man, Swede. We can stay here tonight, can't we? It'll be fine for us to stay here. He nods. So she goes to the bedroom, puts on her pajamas, comes back out to the living room, walks over to the chair where he's sitting, leans over, puts a hand on either arm of the chair, gets about a foot from his face, looks him in the eye, and says to him, don't you have anything to say to me? He mouths back to her the words, I love you. I love you. She smiles and says, I love you too. Gives him a kiss and goes off to bed. Husbands, wives, children, parents, brothers, sisters, good friends, we have been entrusted with the gift of healing touch, not just for strangers, not just for people in our workplace, but most especially for our loved ones. God knows none of us is easy to live with. All of us have our ups and downs. All of us will from time to time be at our worst in the home. Every one of us will experience those moments when our behavior falls victim to the vicissitudes of life. In that moment, will I respond to the anger, the fear, the failure, the irascibility of that loved one with a healing touch? If so, like Jesus before me, like Molly's little girl, like President Bush, like Swede, I can be a miracle worker. Greater things than I have done, Jesus said, you will do in my name. So let's go out of here this week and let's work some miracles. Let the beauty of Christ come alive in you.